Ismail Dawood is a member of the National Association for the Defense of Human Rights in Iraq, and Paola Gasparoli is a member of Occupation Watch and a Bridge to Baghdad. Ismail and Paola have spent the past 3 months or so documenting violations of Iraqi people's human rights by occupation forces here in occupied Iraq. These human rights violations include detentions without due process, and particularly random shootings, torture, forms of hostage taking, for which people are then directed towards a compensation process established for quote-unquote innocent civilians, which has been set up by the coalition provisional authorities under the U.S.'s Foreign Claims Act. Last week, I traveled with Paola and Ismail to Samarra, a town roughly 160 kilometers north of Baghdad, to visit two families who have experienced firsthand the aggression and the brutality of occupation forces. It was the sort of trip that they've made countless times over the past few months to listen and to document family stories. Ismail, I was wondering if you could start by talking a little bit about the stories that we heard in Samarra.
Actually, the first story that we heard is about the family their house had been searched, and members of this family have been arrested and captured. They don't know why, but the Americans says that we have an information about your family, and one member is wanted. They just break the house, they enter and start searching the house, and they arrest the son, the brother. They want someone, but he was not there because he was in Baghdad with his mother and his wife, but they couldn't understand why they take his brother. And after that, they came after one day, they arrest his sister also. There was no real investigation with this family. They always just ask them about their names, their job, and they keep them in a place named Silo Samarra, where they keep the prisoners that they captured in that area, Samarra, and the villages around Samarra. And the fact that they beat the guy while they arrest him inside his house, they beat the son, they beat the father. You can see their way to do investigations with the family. They start with the father. They kick him, they beat him, they handcuffed him, and he's suffering from this. And actually, he's an old man. He's 63 years old. Now he have two broken ribs, and the son, his ear, he cannot hear, and his eyes also damaged because of the beating. And the beating continues inside the Silo Samarra during asking him about the informations and documents. They ask him about strange things, just like the pictures that his father take with his friends. Also the pictures that he take during the university in old time. And they ask him who's this, and their names, their job, where are they now? And of course the son cannot provide this kind of information. And they also beat him inside Silo Samarra, inside the tent for the investigation, that they did the investigation inside this tent. In fact, they also oblige him to give the address of one of his friends. They take him at the night and they go to the address and they arrest the friend. And this friend spent 80 days inside Silo Samarra for nothing, also for the investigations. And after they bring the sister, they put inside Silo Samarra the same, inside. They ask her a few questions, and it seems to be that the military police don't know why they arrest this girl. The American soldiers says that the son, the first son that you have in our papers, that you say that you are from the Fidayeen, and your brother also, and your sister also. Of course, he was surprised with this information. He said that I didn't give this kind of information, and my sister is not involved with any kind of actions. And for the sister, she said that the fact that the women in the all Iraq, and especially in Samarra, are not used to go outside or to outside or to involve with these kind of actions. And after the guy, the wanted son, have came to Sela Samarra and appears and tell them, here I am, so you can send free my sister and my brother. But they let him spend 2 days. After that, they just released them all.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the second story briefly?
Yes, actually, the second story, there's nothing to tell. They just, in one day, there's a person coming back from Baghdad trying to reach his house in Samarra with his cousin. They were in a car, pickup, and they were bringing some staffs for their shop inside Samarra. And actually, it was a night, and the American soldiers stopped them and arrest. They handcuffed them and they take them to the river, and they threw them on the river. The son was killed because he couldn't. He can swim, but it was cold, and it was not as. Possible for him to survive. His cousin, he was the witness. He succeeded to survive, but he hide himself for an hour when he make sure that the Americans go, and then he appears and tell us the story.
Are these stories sort of typical of the ones that you've been hearing over 3 or 4 months as you've been documenting human rights violations?
Actually, the general situation is the same, but we are now going deeply through the detainees case, but you can find also similar information about detainees, about, I mean, the fact of the searching the house, the way of the arrest, the beating, the investigations, but you can hear also about another cases such as the random shooting, the cluster bombs, and these are not... covered in these two stories, but for the detainees, for the searching, they are all the same.
Usually the only recourse available to families who've been forced into these conditions, who've suffered under occupation forces, is this compensation process. And Paula, I was wondering if you could explain a bit about what the compensation process is, and then also talk about the report you wrote on it, because that report basically indicts the entire process, saying that it actually has multiplied human rights abuses instead of actually doing anything to resolve the situation.
Well, the compensation procedures is the procedures through which families can ask a compensation to American forces. In the sense that here in Iraq are not only the U.S. soldier to die or innocent civilian attack who died during blast or car explosion. There are also civilians who remain injured and died because of the random shooting caused by the American soldier. In the sense that a lot of time when they are attacked, and they just reply shooting randomly, and they don't take care in which location they are. They shoot it in a crowded area, in market, in parking places. Well, when on the floor, usually remain innocent civilian that has nothing to do with the attack. Families in this case, theoretically, can ask compensation. But the law that the Americans are using is the Foreign Claim Act. And you can ask compensation only for what happened after May the 1st and also after May the 1st in non-combat situation. And you have to give evidence that soldiers were acting in a wrong way or they were negligent. this is very hard to prove, because incumbent situation is a definition that is up to them and is very elastic. Also, searching in house for them is a combat situation. And usually the reply is that the soldiers were following the rules of engagement. In Iraq, the rules of engagement are secret because of a security reason. So it's impossible for a lawyer to understand the space inside the law to give evidence that they were not following the rules of engagement. And using this kind of law, the result is that the most important cases are not taken into consideration, and that the claim and the request of a compensation are denied. Just to give an example, in Abu Ghraib, who is a last neighbor in Baghdad before taking the road to Fallujah, there were two tanks. A very young guy arrived running. He climbed on the second tank, he threw inside a grenade, and he escaped very, very quickly. The soldier got off the first tank, checked what's happened inside the second tank, and one of them started shooting randomly on a marketplace. The result of this operation was one girl, 7 years old, died, remained killed, and a man of 37 years old, and another guy was injured in his neck. The body and the injured guy were something like 300 meters on the back of the tank. There was no reason to shoot randomly in a crowded area. It was impossible to get to kill or to arrest the attacker. And this is definitely a violation of the Convention of Geneva, when the convention said that the occupying power has to guarantee security for civilians. And definitely shooting in a crowded area is not the way to protect civilians. Above all, if the action is totally unuseful to get the attacker. The American lawyers and the American authorities not taking care of these cases, it means that they are not interested to verify if there was a correct use of violence, or if we are in front of excessive use of force, excessive use of fire, or a definitely unuseful behavior. Cases like this, there are a lot. It's not the only one. And families are going in a pilgrimage to CIMOC office. And the CIMOC office are the office where you present a claim, are above all inside military base. You present your claim to a judge lawyer, and he's a military. And he or she arrive in uniform with M16 sometimes, sometimes with grenades. These locations are a target for the resistance. So also in this case, you are not taking care of civilians. They wait for hours. They arrive in some CIMOC at 5 o'clock in the morning to put their name on the list. And usually the answer is, come back next week, come back next week, is a refrain that every Iraqi people who unfortunately has to go there are always listening to this sentence. They lost a lot of time the file. A lot of time they asked to come back because the lawyer has not the time to look through the claim, or because they need more information. And at the beginning for the Iraqi, it was very difficult to understand where to go, which kind of document to present. Moreover, all the reply are given in English. So even if there is a translator on the spot, when they go home, for them it's very difficult to study, to analyze any kind of reply that they get. They are in Arabic. There are not a lot of Iraqi people that can understand English. So it's a very confused process, very long one, and above all, it excludes all the most important cases.
Is there any better solution that you can imagine?
Well, there are a lot of things that they can do in order to improve the situation. But this will be only improvement, perhaps to put more women, to welcome women, perhaps to change the location from military base to more civilian location, perhaps to give a real appointment, come next week at 10 o'clock. But the problem is the law that they are using. They need to change the law in order to give compensation, in order to respect the sorrow and the pain of these people. A lot of them feel themselves insulted or have the sensation that their son, their brother, their wife is killed twice. Once material killed, and the second time when they try to have justice in a country that has not justice for years, and is really a frustration for them, a disappointment, and the anger is increasing. Also because we are not speaking about few people. The situation is huge. And when they kill someone in neighborhood, it's not only the families itself who knows about the stories, all the neighborhood. And when they receive a denial, it's all the neighbor who knows about it. When they enter in a house in the middle of the night, using helicopter to enter from the roof, blowing up doors because they don't succeed in smashing them down, it means that all an area, all a neighborhood realize what is happening. They put fat women a lot of time outside in the night, in the street, without giving them the time to put a different dress from the night, the one that they are dressing, without veil a lot of time. The searching are very violent, very rude. They scrap Quran, they put Quran on the floor, they walk on Quran, they broke furniture, glasses, windows, glasses. They steal money. This is another big issue. A lot of families are denouncing the soldier seized money, and they don't give back money to the family. And gold. Gold in Iraq is a very common thing to have in the house. It's a traditional gift for the important events of the life. And really, we are speaking about huge number of people. And if we put together the detainee situation, we are speaking about thousands of people who are suffering a very, very strong repression. And in a certain sense, we are in front of collective punishment. When they decide to search an area and to arrest people, they just arrest in a blind way, or following a report. But if they decide to search an area because of there was an explosion nearby, and nearby can be also 2-3 kilometers, they just enter in houses, search all of them, and arrest people in a blind way. And then, for instance, in the Dora countryside, that is a neighborhood attached to Baghdad, they are going back every night, almost knocking the door, knocking the windows, and just going away, knowing perhaps that in that house there are only women, because they have already arrested all the men. So this is terrifying people. Children, above all, remain traumatized after this kind of search. It's very hard to find the families in Iraq without children inside. And all this violence, people arriving with uniform, with the torch on the helmet, speaking a language that they cannot understand. A lot of time they assist the beating of the father of the big brother. They assist the way in which mothers are treated, and they remain really traumatized. They start to wet the bed during the night, to awake in the middle of the night, whatever noise they heard. They don't want to sleep anymore alone or with the brother. They want to sleep with the mother and the father. Sometimes the wife are so terrified that they decide to go back to live with the original family. So the way in which the Iraqi families are suffering from this kind of brutality are really wide.
Today we're actually speaking at an event called 3 Days of Solidarity with Iraqi People Suffering Under Occupation that both your organizations have participated in organizing, and in conjunction with two other Iraqi human rights groups and the Christian Peacemaker team here in Iraq. And I was wondering, Ismail, if you could just talk a little bit about the Days of Solidarity and what you're hoping to achieve through them.
First, this is the first time that we can work together, Iraqi NGOs and international NGOs, about these issues. And Yeah, they are the Americans and tanks are passing by. We think that these days for solidarity is very important to make the impression of safe for the families when they want to tell their stories. Here they can feel safe. Yeah, they are speaking with NGOs, a local international press. They can speak better about their stories, and also the lawyers here. This is the first, how to get the stories from the families, and second, to have idea about these NGOs who've been working on the same issues, about the difficulties, about the best way to deal with these issues. So we are trying to do in these days, each day we will have a meeting to speak about special kinds of violation. In general, in these 3 days, we will hear all the stories about violation and casualties. But as example, for the first day, we will have a meeting speaking about the NGOs and how to cooperate with the international NGOs, with the families, how to make pressure on the Americans to respect the international law and the human rights. Tomorrow will be for the compensations issues, and we want to speak louder about the procedures that they used for the compensation issues, the Foreign Claim Act, and etc. Because it's actually is not working, and the families are not satisfied with these procedures because they got nothing. The third day will be about the detainees, and the detainees issues is very big here because now they are entering the place. Okay. Yeah, they are entering the place now. We have the Americans. They put their car inside near the tent of the solidarity, and there are tanks, there are jeeps. I don't know why are they here, but of course we welcome them if they want to listen to the families, but not in this way with all these weapons, with this tank, armored personal carrier. You can see them everywhere. They are everywhere around us. Let's see why they are here.
Did you send them an invitation?
Actually, we went to the CPA Human Rights Office, and we gave an invitation for the Human Rights Office to come here to listen with us. But of course, we didn't send to the tanks. We need someone from the military and authorities to see the stories of the people here.
Just looking at them, to me, it seems rather difficult to listen when you've got that much flak jacket gear on and that big a gun.
Yeah, of course, we are trying to understand why they are here. And I don't think that they are here to take part in our solidarity days. But we want them to listen to us. If it was the best way to make them listen, we are ready for that.
Maybe if you could just continue describing what the third day around detentions will look like.
Yeah, the third day we are trying to speak louder about the detainees situation, the human rights situation, the legal situation for detainees. Also the fact that in some places they are torturing people, they are beating people, the way of arrest, the way of release. We have many variations to speak on the 18th. And also we are preparing a march for asking for the rights for detainees if they give us the authorities. The last day will be to end these days of solidarity with a press conference. In this press conference, we're trying to explain what we have done through these days and where we are expecting from these days, and maybe to pronounce an office for information where the families can come and give their stories. Then, after we have the information, we can deal with it, like involving the UN with us, involving the Ministry of Human Rights, the Iraqi one, and separating information by media and press.
Often in Iraq, or almost all the time in Iraq, I've come to realize that when you talk about the resistance to occupation, it means a very specific sort of armed resistance, and people aren't always clear on where that resistance is coming from. But in some sense, are these 3 days of solidarity also a form of resistance, maybe a different form of resistance to the occupation?
Yeah, definitely the point is this one. Which kind of resistance there is in Iraq, and which is an alternative way to resist to occupation. And I think that to succeed to mobilize the civil society is one of the best way in the present situation in Iraq. And the presence of tank and U.S. soldier here, I don't think that is for chance. It's true that nearby there is the Ministry of Justice and the British Embassy, but to came nearby a human rights organization during so important happening, it's something that I don't think that is a chance. So it means that the civil society who start to mobilize against the brutality of the occupation is something that scared them.
Thank you both. This is Andrea Schmidt reporting for CKUT 90.3 FM and the Iraq Solidarity Project in occupied Baghdad.